Okay.
All right, good morning. It's January 20th, 2026. And there still is an internet, and there still is country here. I gave the date, right? That's all we need. That's the only thing I usually give here to start. We're going to meditate for about 20 minutes and then talk about Dharma and recovery. So, welcome everyone. Delightful that people are here. And I imagine and hope you are all ready to settle the mind and body for a few minutes. Oh, just finding your seat, letting yourself get comfortable. And can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And just feeling the body at rest and stillness. Taking a little time to scan the body, feel the various sensations, have a sense of settling, of releasing any tension. And this is an effort to create a regular, essentially pleasant, state of being relaxed, but that doesn't mean you necessarily feel that. It's okay if you're sitting and there's some other physical or energetic state that's dominant, something unpleasant, maybe some pain in the body, or you're sick, or some stress, some anxiety. Just mindfulness is not about creating a special state or even about feeling good. It starts with just awareness of what is. Non-resistance to what is tends to actually make things a little more pleasant, or at least less unpleasant, shall we say. So that essential idea of letting go starts in the body, with letting go of tension. And it moves on to letting go of thinking. Doesn't mean that we don't have thoughts, but when we notice them, we let them go and come back to the breath. A part of grounding attention in the body is focusing on the breath, letting the breath be your present moment connection. Perhaps the key moment in practice is the moment of realizing the mind has wandered. Certainly, we need the commitment and persistence to return to the breath in that moment. But even before that, it's quite useful to notice, how do I feel right now? How has this thinking affected my mental state? And indeed, how has this mental state affected my thinking? So here we are, seeing, investigating the way that suffering arises, the connection between grasping and dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Noticing what your thoughts are trying to do. Trying to control the future or rewrite the past. Judging the present moment. So much energy spent trying to do things that the mind really can't do. Can't fix the past or create the future. But also seeing that we don't really have control over all this thinking. And so there's a way we can, at times, step away and just almost feel or sense or see the thoughts running on without us on board. Like watching train cars passing by us without trying to hop a ride. I take it you could hear that bell. I can barely hear it with these earbuds on. But
Everything's quiet this morning, but we could hear it.
Kate mentioned that you're having trouble hearing me, so I turned up my output. Of course, when I start to guide the meditation, I tend to the voice drops a bit. So I can turn up my output a little bit more. Okay. Yeah, I can see it's not registering very high. I don't have my, it's not my home microphone, so just using these earbuds that.
You're pretty audible.
Okay. And I mean, you guys can always turn it up on your end too, so. All right. Well, gee, just thinking about how much there is to think of talk about and that I don't want to talk about or think about. And I think in some ways I do think that people come here and we and I come here to it's not an escape, but it is a refuge, for us to reflect on these vital aspects and broader aspects of our reality, because the particulars of our present moment reality can be pretty overwhelming. One of the ways we can do that is by studying texts, which is something I've been doing quite a bit lately. Been writing on some texts and taking notes on Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness, which is one I really recommend to everyone. A really great, great book. And so I came upon one line that I thought was a good basis for a little bit of conversation this morning. He says, we don't have to wait for some good or special experience in order to be mindful. Any object will do. Nothing is outside the range of mindfulness. And, I think this is something that when we, particularly when we're just learning to meditate, something we probably need to hear because there's such a tendency to try to get away from anything that's unpleasant and to either try to get away from it or fix it or change it. So if it's in the mind, we want to fix it. If it's in our body, we want to take a drug, eat some food, go for a walk, something to change the way our body feels. And certainly in our relationships, we'll want to figure out how to make ourselves comfortable. And so, I mean, Joseph is particularly talking about meditation because this book Mindfulness is, about mindfulness meditation ultimately, but the bigger point is also valuable. Certainly, though, when it comes to meditation, one of the things I point out when I've mentored people in the teacher training is that the two most common questions I get as a meditation teacher are, how do I stop thinking? And how do I get rid of this physical pain? And of course, that those are the wrong questions, if you will. They're not. The idea of meditation isn't to stop thinking or to make our bodies be comfortable. It's not to get into some special states, bliss or just peace. The ideas of mindfulness is to bring clarity and awareness to what is happening And I think that in Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition, there's a reference to the idea of not pushing away anything. Can't remember his exact definition, but this idea of non-reactivity is really a starting point, because as soon as we react, we've moved away from being aware. Now we're moving into the effort to control. So just to make a 12-step connection here, the first step of the 12 steps that we admitted we were powerless over addiction, over alcohol, over food, whatever the addiction is. And I think it's a good starting point as well with meditation, admitting we're powerless over our own minds. And just as with drugs and alcohol, that doesn't mean we have to run rampant. I'm powerless over alcohol, so I have to drink. I'm powerless over my mind doesn't mean that I just have to let my mind go crazy. It's really about changing my relationship to my mind. And we could say changing my relationship to alcohol, that I don't use it anymore, you know. So powerlessness, as I, you know, there's actually a subheading in One Breath at a Time, powerless, not helpless. Doesn't mean that we can't respond wisely or skillfully to this challenge. And that then becomes the challenge, how to respond without reacting, how to have power or make effort, maybe I should say, with the acknowledgement that I don't have control. I don't have absolute control for sure. But just coming back to what Joseph is saying, and I'll read it again. We don't have to wait for some good or special experience in order to be mindful. Any object will do. Nothing is outside the range of mindfulness. So that's a principle of mindfulness. Nothing is outside the range of mindfulness. The idea is that we want to learn to be present for whatever is happening. And so that immediately means that we experience reactivity, that we're right away, we're aware of like not wanting it to be this way and being frustrated that we can't stop thinking and not liking the way our body's feeling or, you know, whatever the frustration is. And so before we even get to being mindful of the thing that we don't like, we have to be mindful of the not liking, if you will. Because that's another form of discomfort. The not liking is really what the Buddha says is the not, is dukkha. That's where the suffering really is, in the not liking. So rather than thinking, oh, I need to, you know, I'm not liking this, I need to just be mindful of the thing. That's actually skipping a step. So when you're like, oh, I'm frustrated, I'm not liking this, the first thing to do is go, oh, can I just be with this not liking? What does that feel like? Can I let go of that? And it's very subtle, right? Letting go of that, because it's not a thing. I'm not holding it like a glass in water, you know. I'm holding it with my mind. So there is, though, a way that we can feel that clinging or that resistance, if you will, in the body. And very often with these practices, the body is the entryway. It's the first thing that the Buddha teaches with mindfulness, is mindfulness of the body. So it's something we come back to a lot. Obviously, we use the breath, but when I think of something like this, something like resistance to, you know, what's happening in my mind, not liking what's going on in my mind, what I see is that it shows up more in tension in my belly, tightness in the chest, sometimes in the jaw and the face. So we start to learn to just like, oh, rather than trying to solve this thing by thinking through, I'm just going to come back and see, can I let go in the body? That's where fear is held. And that's what we're talking about. It is fear, essentially, this resistance, not liking things, afraid of what will happen if I can't control my mind. And so we release the tension in the body. And then the mind starts to shift just very naturally out of that. So that then is being mindful of the resistance, releasing the resistance, and then it becomes possible to be with the unpleasant thing. Okay, I've got pain in my knee, I've got pain in my back, I'm worrying about the future, whatever. Then I can, I'm regretting the past, I'm judging the present, just trying to take care of all the three time places of time, future, past, present. And now I can just, what is that like? What is that sensation in the body like? What is that sound that I don't like of the, you know, the construction next door? What is that like? What is the emotion that I don't like? What does that feel like? So it's this. We have to kind of go through this process to get to a place of just being with whatever is. You know, there's just this, I'll just, in a way, I'll put it down to marketing, you know, when it comes to what people expect from mindfulness, what they expect from meditating. Oh, if you really should meditate because you'll have peace in your life and you'll cultivate love and you'll let go of all your stress. And so that marketing doesn't come with like the footnote of like, but you'll have to go through a bunch of other shit before you get there, you know? Like, oh, they didn't mention that, you know, in the marketing materials. But we come into this, and of course that marketing is playing on the natural human tendency to think things should be a certain way and to compare ourselves to this imagined idea of how things should be and how probably everybody else is, all those other meditators, you know, and certainly this meditation teacher who's probably just floating on a cloud there somewhere. You know, all these, this comparing mind and this judging, we come into this experience with all these projections about what it should be. And then we sit down and it's not like that. So immediately we're off track because we're not coming into this going, I wonder what this is going to be like. I really want to just be fully present for all of it, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. That's not how we're coming into this. We're coming into this as like, I really need to get some peace in my life, and that meditation is supposed to do that for me, you know, and I paid my money, so, you know, it should happen in the next 5 minutes, you know. So we come in already with what we could say wrong view. You know, wrong intention. We're not really doing it for the right, well, it's not that it's the wrong reasons. These are perfectly good reasons to do it. It's just they're not realistic reasons. So we come in and then we get, I don't know if I'm describing anybody's experience here, but I'm certainly describing my own experience when I came to practice. We get into this struggle. And it's like before we've even started, you know, before we've gotten anywhere, it's immediately not working. So, and I just remember being so frustrated because I went on several retreats. And many of you have heard these stories. And I went on some long retreats early in my practice before I got sober. And I can remember sitting down with Jack Kornfield. in Joshua Tree, and like I don't remember anything of what I said, but I remember what he would almost invariably, no matter what I said, he'd be like, "Well, can you just be mindful of that?" And I was like, in my mind, I was like, "I know you know what the answer is, and you're not giving it to me because I'm like a beginner. Just tell me what I'm supposed to do." And then I had the same experience with Joseph Goldstein and other teachers. He would go in, "Oh, the retreat, like it's so hard. I can't stop thinking. My body, my knee's killing me, blah, 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 blah. Well, can you just be aware of that?" And I'd be like, "Fuck, man, these guys." And I think that there are some better ways to respond than "Can you be aware of that?" It's but it's the whole point. It is the challenge. And without sort of giving me a lot of fodder to, mull over and think through and try to figure out, they just kept it really simple until I finally, gave up, as one does. One surrenders and like, okay, I'll just sit with this knee pain. And then it was like, oh, now I'm seeing something different. Because being aware of what is happening, particularly when it's unpleasant, is very revealing. Certainly I see aversion, but I also see that, oh, the aversion was making it worse. It's not as bad as I thought. And when I start to investigate, particularly physical pain, which was something I did a lot in my early practice, I'd be sitting cross-legged and my knees would start to hurt. Started to investigate that, and it was like, oh, I never really felt pain before. Every time I've had physical pain, I've immediately tried to fix it. And whether that was just by moving my body or by, taking a aspirin or, stretching or something, I never just sat there and went, oh, this is what this feels like. So taking that on was quite interesting. And that's where then the actual insights that it's suggested that you might see if you meditate actually started to reveal themselves in working with these difficult things and seeing that the pain, first of all, wasn't a solid thing. It was actually this moving more like an area of energy, of an area of intense energy. And that when I wasn't struggling with it, when I was just breathing and watching it, that it didn't hurt. It still felt unpleasant, but it didn't feel like pain. That was shocking. And but it's very revealing in terms of how the mind defines things and realizing that, oh, what I call pain is just sensation that I don't like. Well, I mean, that's obvious, but it's seeing that, oh, what I'm calling pain is on a spectrum of sensation. It's not this thing over here that just sits there independent of the rest of my physical experience. It's something that when there it's and again, like addiction is this, compulsion and craving that's on a spectrum. We all have craving, we all have desire, every human being, every living being. And it's only when it gets to a certain point that we then name it and give it this solidity. It's this thing Well, that's breaking down the concept actually of self, right? Because I'm calling pain a thing, a self. And when I don't see it as a thing, as a self, then I'm realizing that it's a more of a construction. It's just a process. So all of this starts to unfold, and I see it's impermanent. It's not stable. And it come and it's, increased by my resistance. So dukkha, suffering, comes from craving and aversion. Oh, so all of that starts to reveal itself by being willing to let go of how I think things should be and trying to be present as much as possible with how they are. So I'd like to, can I connect this a little bit with recovery? I mean, clearly, to let go of our addictive crave actions or addiction life, we have to change our relationship to that. We have to change our relationship to the craving and see that relationship in different terms. But I think there's also something about it reminds me a little bit of the idea of, that not I'm not thinking necessarily of the, any day sober is better than a day drinking, but something similar to that, in the sense that when I'm that sobriety is something, recovery, however, whatever language you want to use, is something. It's not a guaranteed, passport to happiness. It also involves pain and discomfort and all that life includes. And addiction is being an addict. The attitude of the addict is somewhat like the attitude of the person who comes to meditation expecting a fix. Addicts think life is supposed to be good all the time. I'm supposed to feel good all the time. I mean, this is, I know that's not 100% true, but just, as a sort of one way of viewing this, there's sort of, it's not okay to feel this way. I need to feel that way. And so I'm going to keep pumping myself full of some, substance, or in other cases, behavior, so that I can feel this certain way, because the other way isn't acceptable. And letting go of that worldview, this view of how life should be. And saying it's okay for life to have ups and downs. It's okay to be unhappy. It's okay to have a bad day. I don't have to change all that. This life as it is valuable, is precious, even when it's not the way I want it to be. Hoping that makes sense as a kind of corollary to mindfulness. Connecting mindfulness and recovery. So, I hope it's helpful for people to just to go back to this line from Joseph Goldstein, that nothing is outside the range of mindfulness. And as I've said, they would tell me, "Can you be aware of that?" And it can be sort of annoying to have people say, it's kind of like the therapist saying, "How does that make you feel?" kind of thing, over and over. But as a kind of mantra, as a kind of way to remind yourself to let go, to just say, nothing is outside the range of mindfulness. We don't have to wait for some good or special experience in order to be mindful. I think this is a really useful way of practicing so that we're not always in conflict and we're not practicing with this good or bad. I'm having a good sit, I'm having a bad sit. I'm good at this, I'm bad at this. Why? I remember that one time my meditation was like this. And I've had people say this to me many times, you know. Oh, I had to sit. It was really incredible. I've been trying to get that back. And I'm like, you're not going to get it back. So I hope that's of some value to people this morning. And I hope everyone is actually not suffering today necessarily. So thank you for your kind attention. And we'll have a little time left if people have questions at all. Oh, Mary Helen, wonderful.
Hi, Kevin. I just found myself wondering if that approach of just being aware is something that one can apply to the reaction to the awful news on the radio. Or is that asking too much? I mean, yeah,
Well,
I'll leave it there.
two things I'll say. First, I want to say that awareness itself is not the end of the process. It's just that it can be very difficult just to get to that point of being aware. It doesn't mean in meditation terms or recovery terms or in the worldly terms that we are passive by any means. It means that we engage with things as they are in a wise way, let's say, that starts with how is it, you know? So how does this feel? And yes, when the world seems to be falling apart, how do I respond to that? Well, the first thing I have to do is see how am I holding this, you know? And of course, I mean, you know, that I can say that that goes like this, you know, in the course of 5 minutes, or certainly in the course of a day. You know, I do pay attention, a lot of attention to the news, and you know, I go through states of great anger and great sorrow, frustration, and then I also go through times of like big picture, you know, like, oh, greed, hatred, and delusion, you know, which, you know, many of you have heard me talk about. Maybe you've read my book, Living Kindness, where I talk about that as a way of just looking at the news as the expression of greed, hatred, and delusion, and realizing that these are the three poisons the Buddha talked about. You know, 25, 2600 years ago, as you know, driving people's behavior and their thoughts, and that hasn't changed, that we still live in a world driven to some great extent by greed, hatred, and delusion. And the Dharma is, you know, meant to go in opposition to that. So yeah, I mean, I have to. You know, coming back to the question, I mean, if I'm not taking care of myself and my own mind states, then if I'm trying to be of service in the world, I'm not going to be able to do that because I'm going to be, you know, carried away by my own distress. So I have to take care of myself, but I certainly don't want to detach myself from the world. That to me is not Dharma. So it's a, you know, it's a tremendous balance. I mean, I was on Facebook last night and seeing the, you know, a lot of people posting about these monks walking through the South, you know, the walk for peace. And just remembering, like, okay, you know, I mean, we know that part of the system of communication in the world is one that's based on triggering people. And there's economic reasons for that, and there's power reasons for that. And so then we realize we're getting bought into a system which is manipulating us for its own purposes. So to at least remember, like, that's not the whole of the reality. This is why I like to see the polls that show like 80% of Americans oppose invading Greenland. It's like, oh, what is reality? We have this like huge voice shouting at us, this madness. And we have to remember, like, that's just one crazy person who happens to unfortunately have a lot of power. So all of that, I mean, I'm just rambling, but for me, there's a lot that I have to do with it, and it does come down to, am I okay right now? And frankly, I'm not doing very much other than just paying attention, and that's, I feel, I'm a little disappointed with myself. I keep thinking about like going to Minnesota, and then I realize it's even colder than it is in New York, and I'm not willing to do that. Thank you, Mary Helen. Yeah. Kathy, hi.
Hello, Kevin. I just wanted to say congratulations to your wife. She is a star. And talking about the monks, she is making all the teachers and making everybody feel so good with that, him taking his teacher to the, taking your wife. So she really is passing on all that goodwill that you talk about and making everybody feel good. So thank you so much. Give her our congratulations. Thanks for sharing that. And I wanted to share one quick thing. It's not important, but your today's thing in your book, Your Buddhism and the 12 Steps, it's about right intention. And it's talking about what our intentions were. And I was sitting here because I made plans to go out to dinner tonight and I get stressed out. Like, why do I make these plans a week ago? Now I don't want to go and I don't like to go out at night and blah, blah. And my intention, then I thought about my intentions about celebrating our birthdays and trying a new restaurant and seeing people's houses. And so it really helped. So thank you for everything that you do and congratulations.
Thank
You're
you.
living with a star. So don't feel bad about yourself. You're doing good.
It's funny that one of the things she's been saying for a long time, all year, is that r what Ryan does makes her feel it is important to her to remember that there is also great art being made, and that our world is not just, madmen, that there's beautiful, loving people doing great things, and that really uplifts her a lot. And thank you, Devin, for your sharing there. Thank you so much for being out there. I'm so moved by what folks are doing in Minneapolis, and there, there's a, I hope you know, Common Ground, the Dharma Center, which was founded by a good friend of mine, Mark Nunberg. I'm sure the folks there are engaged, and we're being challenged, and there's something powerful about that too. Is she, to me, so inspiring to see that people are not rolling over, and it's just so interesting that a certain lot of institutions have immediately bent the knee, and that we as a community, the people, the people. We the people, doing what we can, doing what we can, and so we'll see. Oh, good. So you do know Mark. That's great, Devin. Nice, very nice, beautiful. So, folks, my plan, and I say that with full understanding of plans, is to be at a hotel in Emeryville next Tuesday morning, of all places, because people aren't moving out of our house until Wednesday. But I'm going home because we'll see. There's snow predicted for Monday. The dam's supposed to fly, so anyway, it's great to see everybody, and literally just to see all your faces.
You'll be fine.
I'll be fine. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. I was thinking about how I was at a retreat 2 years ago for 6 weeks, and the last week I spent the whole time worrying about how I was going to leave the retreat. Like, how am I going to get out of here? I don't like traveling. But I have a lot of anxiety about traveling, and it's something I just have learned as I've gotten old. Maybe I've gotten more there. When you get old, you get more anxious. People may have noticed. I don't know if there's any old people here, but anyway, no, there aren't. Thank you, Monica. But it's become more difficult for me. So it's like, oh, I have to make sure I'm this, that, dip, dip, dip. So anyway, thanks for reminding me
Snow
not
is
to
impermanent.
crazy. It is. I am impermanent.
So is fear and worry.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, and we're going to a play tonight. We're going to go see Oedipus on Broadway. So that's our, yeah, playing on Broadway. So, or as the English actress who's in it says, Oedipus. So there you go.
Oedipus.
Oedipus, Oedipus, potato, potato. It's called the whole thing off. All
Look
right, you
at you,
guys. Thank
cultural
you.
echelons,
Yes, we're
See you
there.
next week. Fly
Okay,
safe.
thank you.
Bye, Kevin.
Peace, you
Bye.
guys.
Bye.
I love you.
Bye, Kevin.
Bye.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Thanks. Thanks,
How
Anne.
fun. I'm just so excited and happy for all of you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
next time that's
congratulations.
not going to be January or February, but I'll come back to New York, but preferably a different season.
Yeah.
All right, I'm ending the meeting for all.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.